This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick a Week podcast, episode 354, brought to you by Seagate, GoFlex Satellite, New York Comic Con, and iFanboy listeners like you. iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 354. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And sitting in for Morrison Con planning, Ron Richards, is the internet's Paul Montgomery.
Uh-huh.
How are you, Paul?
Great.
Thank you for sitting in for Ron, who is now in Las Vegas. Hopefully not.
I gave him a fiver to put everything on red. Let it ride.
Awesome. So you would go with the red because then you only get a 2-to-1 payback. Whereas if you go for a number, obviously it's 1 in 36, but big payoff.
I actually told Niesman to put 5 on black, so
either I'll be way, fine. Yeah.
I played roulette once and I did not lose my shirt.
We are fanboy.com. We like comics, read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one they read, writes about the website, talk about the podcast, along with other books of the week and other comic book topics of interest. And sometimes history, but not this week. This week, no history. It's all about science this week.
History and science.
I got my periodic table out.
Yeah, before we got to the show, a quick reminder and warning, it's a review show, so we'll spoil things. What can we spoil this week? Anything right off the top?
Well, we could talk about Sons of Anarchy.
No. So if you haven't watched the show, or you haven't listened to the show, or you haven't watched Sons of Anarchy, pause it, come back. You don't want to be spoiled.
I'm probably not going to spoil Sons of Anarchy.
Everyone should watch out for herpes.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm totally going to spoil Popeye for everybody later on.
Okay. Ew. This week, Josh had to pick.
Man,
you went out on the limb again.
I read so many comic books this week. I mean, I would say above and beyond, especially sort of what I normally read. And I tried a bunch of stuff out. I've been really enjoying sort of the little dips of my toe into the DC Zero issues. I read a lot of stuff. And I got to the end. I had one book left to read, and it was Fury Max number 6. And if you've been following along, Fury Max number 3 and 4 have both been picks of the week. And I think that when number 5 came out, Ron had the pick. And if he hadn't, it would have also been pick of the week.
It's been in a series where every issue could have very easily been picked up.
This is what I'm saying. And I was like, I know what's going to happen when I read this. So I start reading it, and I'm like, well, maybe, you know, a couple of pages. I'm like, maybe this isn't that very good one. Maybe this is. And then I was like, no, it's very good again. It's a very good comic book. And I guess the reason that made me pick this issue, the thing that I was thinking about this one, is that It just to bring you up to speed on the history of it, they're in Cuba during the Bay of Pigs invasion, and Fury and his two-man team are tasked with assassinating Castro. It goes wrong, and they get captured. That brings us to the beginning of the issue. And there's a bit where the Cubans are trying to get information from them, and they're torturing one of the guys. And you know, they're not gonna say anything. It's this sort of, you know, God, love, and country duty. You know, the men will be tough. They won't say anything. And it really reminded me of Preacher. And once I got off on that, I started thinking about Preacher. Is for those of you not, this is my favorite comic book series of all time. I think I can officially say that. I have been for a little while. There's nothing in comics that I've enjoyed more than Preacher, in pretty much anything, really, movies, whatever.
It's mine now too.
Really,
having just read it this year.
It's really
That's
that high.
Crazy.
I mainlined the whole thing, and it's now my favorite
thing.
Nothing touches that.
Right.
I never would have predicted that for Paul.
I love it. I
wouldn't either. That's why it took me so long to read it. But
And one of the things that about this is just it had that sense of duty, that there's a sort of, it's a fictional machismo, but it definitely is like, this is what a man does. And I'm not like that. I'm not an Ernest Hemingway convert, but it's attractive to me. It appeals to me, especially in a fictional sense. And Ennis does that really, really well. He does that tough soldier. You're doing this because it's the right thing to do, because it's your duty. And that's what Nick Fury is in this. And in a way that he isn't in sort of Marvel Universe books. In Marvel Universe books, he's the guy who, he's almost omnipotent. He's the guy who doesn't really have any powers, but he knows everything that's going on. He's one step ahead of everybody, and he's just always got that trick up his sleeve. This is a different thing. This is a guy who is just, through sheer willpower and sort of strength of his character, is the toughest guy in the room at all times, which is basically Garth Ennis' thing.
Which he does so well, and I think that's what's really attractive about it. With any story like that, you like to follow people who are very good at what they do, and they're not going to always win. Clearly, Fury doesn't always win, even though he survives each time. In fact, I think you could say he loses each time, even though he survives.
I don't believe he's won any of these.
No.
You know, so then they go out to a dock, and they're like, okay. Basically, the captives figured, hey, they're not going to kill us. They're just going to put us on a show trial. Turns out not the case. They threw them in heavily shark-infested waters. And the violence in this is actually sort of cartoony, but it isn't played up for humor quite in the way that it is in Preacher. Preacher's a little cartoony in its humor, although it's hits you with emotional punches differently than this.
Yeah.
But it was just a great issue, and the sort of the acceptance of the horrors of the world that Fury sort of deals with it, you know, in this. I just really like the way it's done, and I just started thinking about the way that Ennis writes and what he does, and there's very little excess in this. There's not a lot of talking, there's not a lot of explaining, there's no narration boxes. A lot of it's done through, you know, very little dialogue and a bit of cartooning, and then the other side of this is, when Ennis has the right kind of cartoonist working with him, the right kind of comic book artist, as we saw with Preacher and we've seen with other things, it really brings out the best of him. And the more that I read this, and the more that I've seen Goran Parlov you know, draw, you know, his stories, the more that it just feels very right in a way that like Steve Dillon on paper, if you were to just sort of look at the drawings, they're not actually all that impressive. But when you start reading the story that those drawings make up, then you see where his real skill is.
I would disagree that they're not impressive. Okay. On their own, but the only problem, and I love this issue, the only problem I had, I thought their escape was really too easy. But mm-hmm. Other than that, I think that ultimately didn't really matter because
I really liked the setup of the escape with that sort of one panel that sort of alluded to, you know, Old Man in the Sea. It's like, here's a boat. I have a knife. There are sharks. You know.
Sure. And I think ultimately it doesn't matter because it's about these guys in the situation and it's about what happens in the boat after they escape. And it's about, you know, ripping a guy's lip off with your tongue, with your teeth. But
yes,
it's wonderful and it's come out of nowhere. You know, I know people are sick of us talking about it, but I don't care because it's so fantastic. And I could have easily made this my pick of the week. I don't know if I did. I don't remember what I did at all, if I did one at all. But each issue is just as good as the last, and it builds. It's building. I mean, we're going through history with Fury. Next stop is Vietnam in December. So we have to wait a few months for the next one.
What was really cool about this, too, was that the sort of last sequence where the thing that happened was relatively wordless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's just a soldier looking at another soldier and knowing what they mean, and they don't need to explain it, and it's you know, making the tough choice, and the Hatherly sort of is the everyman in that situation, the guy who would react normally.
He's the idealist soldier. Yeah. You know, he wants to be doing good but doesn't accept the horrors of reality, especially in a war scenario, and doesn't take them lightly. And it's good. And I think the whole subplot we didn't talk about with the senator, mm-hmm. who tried to set up the Bay of Pigs with the Cuban exiles and then sort of bolted out the back door when it went wrong, leaving his wife with these angry Cubans, was, you know, I enjoy this ongoing subplot with these mm-hmm. with this character. They seem to be setting up some sort of Kennedy assassination thing. Whether that'll be dealt with or not in the Vietnam section is a question. But
I was promised no history on this episode.
You're right. I switched back to history.
Whoa!
But
all right.
It's hard question in a book that takes place all through history. Yes.
Do you guys find these Max books more exciting because, on, you know, at least editorially speaking, like anything can happen, and that's maybe not the case with the mainstream superhero titles?
For me, it's almost
so this is a regular Nick Fury book.
It's almost the opposite in that this can actually just, it's not that anything can happen, it's that they get to tell the story and there's no chance that Iron Man is going to fly in and derail it because of an editorial event.
Mm.
If that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
sure.
You can tell him, and this is a lot more freedom, which I think is part of the appeal. You know, it's not so much that Nick Fury might die, because he's not, because the book opens with him as an old man in the future.
Okay.
But
it's
that he can do whatever he wants with these stories and these characters and not be constrained by anything. And you get a much more realistic story in that way.
And he's telling his story that exists in the middle of what is real history. And while the names aren't real, the sort of intentions of, you know, the politicians involved and the sides of Bay of Pigs, we're far enough away from the Bay of Pigs now that a lot of people probably don't know very much about it. So if you're interested in history, this all checks out for the most part. And if you're not,
it was a Mad Men.
Yeah, yes. It was a really big deal for those of you not.
People were scared.
For those of you born in the 80s and later. It was a really big deal, and it affects our policy today. And like the thing is Ennis is on top of being able to do emotional beats really well and knowing military history, really knows history very well. Like his history is really strong and his respect for it, and that comes through in the book. And I think that's another thing that I like about it.
And his respect for the men who waged the war.
Absolutely,
there's nothing not wonderful about these books. And it's basically, and it's finding another way to do some more war comics, but also through the filter of not so much about war itself, but history and the history of war, and using Fury as a great character in which to tell these stories through.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because you can say Fury, and this Fury doesn't make me think of Sam Jackson at all. But then you can go to the other books or the movie and be like, oh, that's Fury there, and he's actually proving to be very malleable.
He's a great character in that way because he does exist in history.
Yeah, that's really nice. So you know, there was no choice to it. I really did try for variety, but you know, at the end of the day, that book was a great book. So
this is the final week of the DC Zero issues, telling the past stories of the current characters, and a lot of books this week. Let's highlight a couple. Jonah Hex Zero, which is right on top of my stack, so we'll start with that one. was basically retelling the story of young Jonah Hex. And this, Josh, I know will love this because this is basically like the old series.
I was very excited to get out of Gotham and go back. I liked this a lot. The first few pages with the sort of really hardcore dad stuff. I was like, all right, we're back.
Some great domestic violence.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong. Then as we sort of get into the Apache stuff, I felt like I'd read some of this and not unrecently, but it's probably been a few years, but.
And it's clear that they've also written it, you know, recently, cause they don't really go into great detail with it.
Yeah.
This is kind of written, you know, with, past fans of the Jonah Hex, you know, the original series in mind.
It was kind of a recap of what I already sort of knew.
But also for the new fan. I mean, there's a lot more people reading it than before. So this is also keeping the new fans in mind as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit odd how like there are some scenes that are really fleshed out, like the opening scene with the battery that Josh really enjoyed because that's his thing. But then you get into
thing.
But then you get into the Apaches and sort of like glossed over, like things happen in two or three panels instead of, you know, three or four pages. So the pacing is a little bit odd, but the Moritat art is beautiful. I love the coloring in this book.
Nice colors.
Mm-hmm. There's a great Confederate Burt Reynolds in here. if you look for them, and it's neat. It's interesting. It switches from Moritat to Pia Guerra, I believe.
Does it?
In the last few pages. She's not listed as an artist, but she's listed as special thanks. So I don't know if she's just...
Last page does look like Pia Guerra.
Look at that.
It's all the Gotham stuff. Like, I was like, when it switched, I was like, wait a minute, this is a little... And so I don't know if it's a mix or if it's just Pia Guerra, but it's weird that she's not listed as.
You're right. All the Gotham stuff does look a lot like Why the Last Man.
Huh.
So kind of an interesting, but it works because it's jumping from the flashback to the present.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. It was a little like I liked it. I enjoyed it going back, but I'm kind of tired of the Gotham stuff. I don't find it as much fun.
I ain't got no mind for no jabber.
True.
Let's talk about a couple of high-profile ones. Talon number 0 came out, which is the first time we've seen this new series from Scott Snyder's doing the plotting with James Tinney and the Fourth. James Tinney and the Fourth really doing the writing with Guillaume March on pencils. And I quite enjoyed this. Paul, did you read this?
Yeah, I was delighted to see an escape artist, which, as you know, is my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't know, one of my favorite literary
kind of... How do you feel about naked escape artists? Because there was a lot of that, too.
Well, that's, you know, some extra. That's fine. It's good. I kind of want to see where this all goes in issue one. It's a little early, but... it's, you know, and it's an origin story. So I want to see what the regular book is going to be like from month to month. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely going to come back next month.
Does this make me cranky, but are owls getting to be a little Norman Osborn-y?
Not really in the Batman book because it's only really in the Snyder stuff.
Okay, fair enough.
It's not in any of the other Batman books. So
I feel like
I think they have the potential to get that way.
Yes.
But,
it's been a long time.
But I mean,
I feel like they're still only scratching the surface.
But I mean, next month, Joker. So
I bet the owls are
going to go away. Well, sure.
But. I mean, do you feel that way about like AIM or people like
no,
that?
No, because AIM is hilarious.
Right.
look at their hats.
Now, Paul, Superman 0. You're the Superman. You and I are the big Superman fans around here. Superman was disastrously relaunched. And with the new 52, now we got the new creative team of Scott Lobdell and Kenneth Rocafort moved over from Red Hood and the Outlaws. What did you think?
And my grimace could be heard around the world when that announcement was made. I don't know. It pains me to not be reading a Superman book because I'm not even reading action at this point anymore. So, but it's not like I'm going to keep reading it just until it gets good. Sure. So, but I wanted to check it out with the new creative team. Kenneth Rocafort, not really my. I mean, I like his art sometimes, but not really my pick for a Superman book, just tonally. But this it kind of works in places here because it's old Krypton and it's really designy stuff. It sometimes gets a little bit too noisy with the design choices and the sharp edges, and it's a little over-designed, I think. But it's interesting. It's a Jor-El story. I always like a Jor-El story. I'll try the first one out. There's a neat little twist here that Kal-El was on Krypton watching what was going on with his dad in the final days. So there's some kind of time travel-y stuff going on, I guess. So we'll try out the next one. We'll see. I don't have really high hopes for it.
Yeah, I don't either. I think Loeb Dell, as much as I enjoyed his first issues, which I did, the Superboy issue I liked a lot. And
yeah.
Some other stuff. He's quickly become stuff I'm not interested in reading.
Yeah, it's not the tone that I want for a Superman book.
But I will give the first issue a try. I did quite like the way Rocafort drew Kal-El at the end.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Can we briefly talk about Justice League Dark number 0?
I was going to jump into one more Scott Lobdell book quickly before we're done.
Oh, go for it. Yeah, do that.
Teen Titans 0. Oh. The much heralded origin of Tim Drake. Did anyone else read this?
No. How did it go?
You told me to, and I couldn't do it. I looked at it and I went, I can't do this.
It's no lonely place of dying, that's for sure.
says the old man.
It's just weird. I mean, they seem to be, as much as they try to fix this problem of having all these characters who were Robin in a short time span, they just make it worse.
That's what always happens when they try to explain.
They keep digging a hole deeper.
It's like explaining time travel, explaining how time travel works. Just do it.
Do you remember when Spider-Man had like 3 jobs and he was Spider-Man and he was still married?
Yes.
And Marvel's explanation to everybody was just deal with it.
Yeah.
And I think that was the best thing. And then they went against their own advice when they went and did. I guess One More Day, whatever it was that like they went to. The one that came after One More Day, but between them there was a thing where they went to explain everything and
that was last week.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Bright New Day
Before Noon on Sundays, I think it was called. Anyway,
Tuesdays with Maury. So, they basically, Tim Drake is a high functioning teenager who excels at gymnastics. He's an early Olympian candidate. He's a genius and. He kind of decides to figure out who Batman is just for kicks. And the only thing I did like is that he doesn't succeed in figuring out Batman's identity. Because to me, as an adult, the only thing that didn't make sense about A Lonely Place of Dying was this 10-year-old kid figuring out Bruce Wayne is Batman when no one else could. But
I like that.
It's just silly. The idea that they make him Red Robin, so he's not really a Robin, is dumb because he basically functions as Robin wearing an old Robin costume.
He's red, though.
It doesn't change the time problem. It just gives them a different name. It's stupid. So, God,
the time problem is this like parallel to Batman and Jason or
no? Jason has died.
Oh, come on.
And in order to honor Jason's death, he doesn't want to be called Robin. He'll just be called Red Robin, wearing a Robin costume, being Batman's partner. It doesn't make any sense.
It does nothing to solve the problem.
No.
It just creates more problems.
So, yeah, that was a disaster.
That's pretty standard.
Justice League Dark, Josh.
Justice League Dark is basically the DC origin of John Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was awful.
I loved it.
Let me rephrase. It was done just fine. But this is the problem that I've had ever since they brought him in here. Like, I hated how clean it was. I hated that he had to come to New York to meet people when he's a quintessentially British character. I hate that this guy was wearing the trench coat and that's where he got it and he picked it up because now he's not an original character. He's picking up the what somebody else left behind and
yeah, I didn't see the way I saw it as the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where he had someone he looked up to and he took on the tropes of that person when that person was no longer.
I don't like that it all fit together like a puzzle like that, and that he's not his own character anymore. He's living in somebody else's legacy, which isn't what he is to me. I really thought, I don't think it was badly written. I don't think that I think Lemire, for being a guy who's not from Britain, did really. Pretty good dialogue. I really like the art, but I didn't like how clean it was. It just didn't feel.
You don't
right
think
to
of Hellblazer as a legacy.
Yeah,
Hellblazer. I mean,
but it wasn't a
John
legacy. It's only just a jacket.
But that's it. And the other guy like lit a cigarette and was wearing the jacket and the tie. I mean, he basically took on this guy's persona. John didn't look like that at the beginning.
I don't know. The very first time you see him on the first page, he's lighting a cigarette at the airport. I mean, it's just a jacket.
I know, but this is my. I'm a longtime fan of the character, and this is a different version of it, and it's not working for me as well. It's very much a a streamlined version of it that doesn't have the attractiveness of what the other one does. It loses some of the aspects of it, I suppose.
Yeah, for me, making a PG-13 John Constantine is not, I don't know, it's, I don't think it's worth doing.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, it's, as long as I don't have to think about that part of it, I can kind of read him drop in. He's a really great character for the DCU in terms of, like, you can kind of put him in everything. Mm-hmm. Like, he just can show up somewhere, and he's, I don't want to say Loki, but he's, like, a bit of chaos, you know, that shows up in there, and I really like that.
Well, do you think he's, like, DC's new Punisher? You know, where there's two different versions of him, and
yeah, that's basically
chaos.
Yeah, I suppose.
He's a max version and a DC and a Marvel universe.
Yeah.
What else do we want to talk about for the Zero issues?
Red Flash, it was fine. It looked really pretty, but I don't really care too much about it, which is what everyone's been saying. Firestorm, I read just because, and I think it's really interesting the difference between Yuri Sinar's work in this book as opposed to the sketches that I see him put up.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very different. I thought it was interesting here that they got rid of everything that had been done before, and of course they're explaining it. And now they've basically gone back to what is the original costume, I think, more or less.
I don't know. I haven't been reading.
It doesn't. Don't bother. Yeah. But it wasn't bad. It was just very.
Is it still standard. Two?
It's now
teen guys.
Yes, but now they are functioning in the old style where Ronnie. Is the head? He's the Professor Stein,
right?
And
okay.
And Jason is the body. So they're fighting with each other in their own mind if they touch each other.
I remember when they first announced this as a new 52 title, and they were talking about it's going to have this like Green Lantern level mythology and stuff
that.
That's
a bad idea.
Now it seems like they've backtreaded on that.
I mean, the thing is, it's a really interesting concept, but it's incredibly abstract too. Like there's a guy who exists in your mind and he's not a thing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Firestorm is ostensibly he's one of those powerful characters that could be. He can do anything. He transmutes matter.
Inorganic matter.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, that's
you can't turn you into mushrooms and marshmallows and let us all eat you.
Right. See, you just wrote a story.
My question for Aquaman Zero is why are they so afraid of the Quint-esque mutton chops they first had in the promo image of Aquaman way back a year ago. This was the perfect time to bring back mutton chops, and he was nowhere to be found.
Telling you, sharks really made a big impact in comics this week.
It did.
And they're huge sharks.
Huge deep water sharks.
This was fine.
It was fine. It was fine. I can't think of anything else. Dark Knight was okay. Batman Incorporated was fine. You know? Those are highlights, I think.
Thank God Arthur was able to find that guy who knew everything.
So just very quickly, now that we're at the end of the zero-issue month, what were the strongest ones?
Oh, jeez, Paul, I don't know.
I know that I've read a lot of them.
Last week had most of the strong ones.
I got to say, I don't think that there were a ton of super strong ones, but there were a bunch that were kind of, for me, there were a bunch of issues that were kind of fun to read. Like in a non, like, now I'm going to read this series forever. Kind of way.
Give me some proper nouns.
I can't remember any, so that if that tells you what I'm saying.
Wonder Woman was interesting.
Amethyst, Batman, mm-hmm. Or sort of sorcery, Batman.
Amethyst? Is that how we're saying it?
She's an amethyst.
Amethyst.
Yeah, she's a theist, though. I wanted to like Batman Incorporated a lot, and I thought it looked really cool, but it was just a sort of bunch of short stuff, and I was like, I don't remember who all these people are or how it goes together.
All right, let's move on to Happy, number one, the new Image book from Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson. And this was okay. I liked it. I liked it. I didn't love it. It was a lot of setup.
I need issue two before I can make like a hard, you know.
The characters are not terribly well-rounded yet, so I don't care yet.
Right.
It's intriguing enough to want to read two.
Absolutely. For me, the story is, hey, this doesn't actually feel very much like Grant Morrison yet, which I think is pretty interesting.
I was going to say that. If you didn't tell me that it was a Grant Morrison book, I might not have known it.
Because he's not like a super sweary writer guy. Like, it's not
right.
It's not a thing that he normally does.
But he is here.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
For me, the story here was that, look at welcome back to Eric Robertson.
Yeah.
Just a really good-looking version of his art. I've seen inking on him, his own inking of himself, sort of wildly change what his stuff looks like. But I dug this. I really like the colors of sort of when that blue comes in.
And the opening shot with all the snow, I thought it looked really nice. The people may be wondering why we're not talking about the story. I don't really know what it is yet.
Yeah, that's actually
it's a gangster or like a hitman.
Former cop.
Former cop. who hires two other hitmen, more low-life hitmen, to come and kill him, but it's just a ruse so he can get them into his house so he can kill them and collect their bounty, or at least take them out. And at some, and he gets injured, and at some point he starts hallucinating or seeing a tiny blue flying horse cartoon thing. And he ends up in the hospital, I guess, and they're going after him.
Sure.
It's actually a very different thing for Grant Morrison.
Which I like. I like that he's flexing his muscles and doing something completely different.
But we need issue two to really...
Is it six issues? Is it four? Better be six.
I can't stop looking at that little donkey horse thing.
It's weird.
It's so different than everything else that's going on there. It really is visually impactful.
All right, so Josh, we have a new president in Ultimates number 16.
Can I just say I love this?
Like, it's funny because 2 issues ago you weren't reading this book and now you're back on.
I totally am. I was like, you're going to make Captain America. Because what I think Sam Humphries is doing correctly, and I haven't read everything of the Ultimates, the thing that Mark Miller did correctly when he did it was he made it huge and stupid. Mm-hmm. And stupid in the best way, in that like it's just like it doesn't make any sense. You're president now, okay? It's almost like an adult version of Axe Cop. I mean, it's it's just wacky and
hyperbolic.
For a while, Ultimates was all about having the best artist on it, and it is not anymore. and I don't feel as if that actually he's not letting that hamper him because he's making.
Is it Billy Tan?
It was Billy Tan in the last one, and it wasn't horrible, but it was, you know, it's Billy Tan. And this one was Luke Ross, but it was very, Luke Ross used to do Jonah Hex a long time. He's been around a lot, but it was very, sort of watered down. It was very plain, I guess.
So what happens when Cap is given the presidency?
He just flies all over the place, and he doesn't take shit. He's got a jet. They took the tracking devices out of it. They painted some shields on the side, and he's just basically America's splintered apart. And he's forcing truces on everybody by threatening violence from Norse gods and Iron Man. You're going to agree to this truce, or we're going to come back, and you're going to be sorry. Okay. And he flies to the next place and does it again. And so, like, everybody in Congress is trying to be like, you can't do that. You don't have the authority. He's like, I do too. I'm the president. it's just a ton of fun.
It does sound fun.
It is. It's over the top in sort of the best way. Like, they're
maybe
just.
I'll check that issue out.
Yeah, it's fun. You can read 16 without bothering with 15.
Sure
I'm sure
now,
you will.
I think the crowd favorite this week was Wolverine and the X-Men number 17. Yeah. First non-AVX crossover in a long time. A one-shot tale starring Dupe, featuring the art of Mike Allred and Laura Allred, the people who did Ecstatics, which Dupe was a big part of in this issue. We find out why exactly Dupe's been hanging around the school and what his role is in a series of vignettes.
Do we?
His role is to suss out threats against the school before they come about. Yeah. I thought this was very funny.
I thought so too. This might be my pick. It was just fun.
It was. I even read
this. If people don't know what Dupe is, he's like a pickle tato.
He looks like Slimer from Ghostbusters.
He does. He does look like. There's the scene where he's like swallowing up the bowling balls from the Nazi League of Bowlers and then spitting them out again. Was very Slimer.
My favorite image was him sitting at the school board meeting in the trench coat and fedora.
It was a really fun issue, and I think we've said that we mostly talk about Jason Aaron for his grim, sad stories, but he's really funny, and this is actually his sense of humor coming through big time.
Yeah,
it was just weird how it's just a bunch of vignettes almost. Like,
there's he sleeps
with the one woman from the school board in the two panels, and the next panel he sleeps with the dude from the all dressed in a French maid.
Dressed up as a French maid, yeah.
I like that the threats range from serious to completely trivial, like a school board having problems with them. It's the killer.
I don't worry. He goes back in time to save what is it, Josiah Xavier, and it turns up in his diary or his journal that they're reading in a class, and you see him outside with arrows stuck in him and a coonskin cap.
It's just very funny. It was wacky, and I know Josh is the biggest fan of All Red, but I thought his was really appropriate for this.
Yeah, it is. It is appropriate for this. It totally works for that.
And a Howard the Duck cameo for your Howard the Duck.
Yeah,
cameo.
I was impressed enough with that. It was almost, there was so much stuff, it was almost hard to keep track. I was like, did I miss something?
Sexual dynamo.
And then you just learn to go with it. Mm. Yeah, he really is, and it doesn't matter who or what.
It's like a great one shot, and I love the opening where you would usually have the recap, and it says, you know, previously in Wolverine and the X-Men, a lot of things happened, but don't worry, you're pretty little head about it.
I loved it. That was exactly the right thing. I read that, and I was like, oh, this is for me, and I don't have to care. That's perfect.
Right.
It was great. I thought this was great on every level. This epitomizes why this book is so much fun. Because he allows it to be a comedy when it needs to be.
It's funny, because this is the kind of thing I feel like it's going to be polarizing, but I guess I don't give the audience enough credit.
I think people who have been along the ride this long realize what the book is and what it is, and it's mostly a comedy.
I'm sure there are people. That it's such a high-profile book, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't think of this kind of, you know, non sequitur.
I think it started as sort of a mix, and it sort of morphed into a comedy with some bits of action and drama, but mostly it's funny. Which just sort of happens slowly. In the meantime, if you're a fan of media like the three of us are, if you have it on your iPads and your iPhones and your TVs and all kinds of things on your computers, you should get the Seagate GoFlex Satellite. It's the only wireless portable hard drive that streams your content to your iPad and up to 8 other devices. It's got a 500 gigabyte hard drive, Wi-Fi access, and a rechargeable battery. The satellite can carry your entire library of video, music, pictures, and documents to be shared in your iPad or Android tablet via the free GoFlex Media app or your web browser. You can check it all out by heading to http://seagate.com/ifanboy.
You don't have to say that http. It fills
in automatically. I started to because I was reading it like Ron Burgundy, and then I realized I don't need to say that. I started to stop myself, and it was just too late.
Can I tell you about a real-life endorsement? I was in the comic shop, and I heard one dude recommend this to another dude just apropos of nothing. So those
great. I have it, and I have the app on my iPad, and you just stream stuff right to it. You don't have to worry about taking up space on your iPad, which, you know, if you're like me and you have a Generation 1, it's not a lot of space.
Yeah, and you got the hand crank to deal with, too.
It's steam powered, which they would have let that through, but, yeah. You know, it's awesome.
And that was still on Jobs' watch, too, so that's even more confusing.
When I need to read stuff or watch, it gets really hot in here, all the steam.
If you had hair, it would be all puffy.
Yeah. So, but I lose a lot of weight from it. You just sweat it out. So go to seagate.com/ifanboy to check it out. In the meantime, let's talk about Dancer number 5, a series which I enjoyed in the beginning but sort of fell off on because there's a lot of comics.
It turned into being a lot like Edmondson's last series, who is Jake Ellis. Doesn't have exactly the same hook, but it's pretty much the same shadowy, mysterious CIA government thing chasing a dude. Mm-hmm. I read this all the way through. I really like Nick Kine's art a lot. I want to like this more than I did, but I also didn't stop reading it. I don't know what that means.
I had really liked the beginning, but then I just sort of fell off it because it just wasn't compelling me to read more, which, you know.
I like that there's a story like this that exists, but I worry that... I don't worry because I don't really know him, but you know, I worry that like, is this the kind of story that you're just going to do over and over again? Because it's not going to hold up. It's basically like a Bourne series, but with like a not with a cloning element or you know something like that. But
I would certainly read it in trade because it probably would. I tend to like these sort of mystery stories, reading all at once.
But I see though, I don't know if I could completely to go out and buy a $15-$20 trade to read it. I don't know if it's worth that. But I finished it, and it wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be.
Was this the end of the arc?
I think so. It felt like it. It may have just been a miniseries.
What about Skull Kickers?
This was really interesting. Every once in a while, they do a Tales from the Tavern series, which is like a they have other people come in and write stories in this little universe. And I'm not actually reading the ongoing anymore. Let's say it wasn't for me. And in this one, there's actually a bunch of guest writers. Blair Butler does a story in here, and Charles Soule, who were both on a show with me talking about comics at one point. So that was interesting to see them both in here. There's just a bunch of fun little stories, and it was really fun to see what people could do in 4 or 5 pages in this sort of, sword and sorcery world where sort of anything can happen. I thought the Blair story is actually really good, and it was really well done. I had fun with it. So if you fell off and were thinking about checking it out, this is a really neat little anthology that sort of takes place in this world. What's fun about it is seeing the inventiveness of you know what these people can do who are not normally the writers on this, and you sort of with anything they can do. So it's worth checking out, picking up. There's a Layman and Guillory story in there too, and it's clearly them. So it's kind of fun. Popeye.
Okay, now Now sit right back. We're going to talk about some Popeye. I love this book. IDW is releasing new Popeye stories by Roger Langridge, and the artist is Bruce Ozella. And then also there's also a classic Popeye book that they're also doing. They're indistinguishable from each other because what Langridge and Ozella are doing looks exactly like what Seeger did back in the day. And I have like the first big collection of that, and it's like boogie board size hardcover. And it's just they're fun, light stories, and I love throwing this in the mix of all my, you know, really heavy superhero books and things like that. So in this one, Popeye's, you know, adopted son, baby Sweet Pea, who's ostensibly Maggie from The Simpsons, but as a boy, smarter than everyone else, but doesn't talk, wanders over the wrong side of the tracks. And it's literally the wrong side of the train tracks. And our other favorite literary archetype is in here, the street tough. There are street toughs in this book. And do you think that
they're wearing headbands?
What flavor? Dickensian?
Like 30s, like Mickey Rooney kind of street tough.
Nice. Nice.
They've got the Jughead like crown hat.
Oh, that's good.
And the shorts and stuff and a sweater vest.
Okay. No, yeah. Not suit jackets though.
Not suit jackets, no. Like cabbie hats and stuff like that.
Sweet.
And so you got these street toughs surrounding Sweet Pea while Popeye's out looking for him, and you think they're gonna beat him up, but he ends up being a really good fighter, this baby. So they sort of adopt him into their gang, and it's kind of great and a lot of fun.
You know, if you bring a baby to a gang fight, it tends to really throw off the other side.
It's true. It's true. I got to say, Popeye is weird.
Just it is weird. In concept. It's very strange.
It's odd, and we don't. You know, we only get stuff like this in the darkest recesses of indie cartooning now. But this was like a huge thing for the time, and that's really interesting.
Yeah, I
loved Popeye growing up. Yeah. Popeye was one of my favorites.
Even then, I was like, I think this is weird.
I love the dialogue in here. Like, if you follow Popeye's, just the way he says certain words, like, instead of saying orphan, he says, like, orphink. And It's a lot of fun. So I recommend this to anyone who needs something light and funny. And I'm just amazed because if you hold this up to the old comics, it looks exactly the same.
So
I like having the light books to throw in the middle of. That's why I like reading all the DC animated stuff, because it's a nice palate cleanser from all the very serious business going on.
Now I see that Prophet number 29 is next on here. And Paul, what I want to know is, are you going to say anything other than it was weird?
Whenever we talk about Prophet, it's always to say this is really strange and I don't know exactly what's going on, but it's great. Just go with it. Just go with it.
We're gonna do that again, aren't we?
I'm going to talk about. I have 2 points. There are some double page spreads in here, and the artist on this one is Dalrymple, right? Yeah, it's Farrell Dalrymple, and there's some double page spreads in here that are like the hellscapes of Helonius Bosch. So there you go, some art history for you. Just really weird, surreal, scary, like pages of war. And there's this two-page spread towards the beginning, and it's many parsecs later, the calm of space broken by the insanity that is the Extano Circus. And it's this expansive space with starships and weird aliens floating around outside of them attacking each other. And one of the spaceships, because there are always these like aliens that can operate in the vacuum of space fighting, and they live and die in this never-ending war, because they're always out there, the spaceships have to sort of give them like food and nutrients. And so one of the starships has a little square opening, and there's a boob coming out of it. So it's got like this nipple to nurse the little aliens out in space. And it's just this one tiny little element that I noticed out of this big, really busy kind of action sequence. And like there's spikes and tentacles coming out of this ship, but then there's just, it's
a vehicular. Creativity like that is why I love this book.
Yeah, it's just full of these weird details, and I guess stuff seem weird, but it's just so imaginative, and it's always exciting.
Now, the Punisher 16 closes out Rucka's story about the Lady Punisher, for lack of a better term, Sergeant Cole, which will there'll be a little bit more Punisher from Rucka through the Punisher Warzone miniseries, and then he'll be done with that. But this basically ends. This is basically chapter 16 of his story.
So it was a bad call to jump on with the last issue.
Yes, this was the last issue of the story. So if you just read this one, you might be.
I read this one and the last one. I mean, I followed it. I actually really liked it. Go ahead, you can.
Yeah, no, that's basically what I wanted to say. It was the final issue. This was a great 16-issue run. If they collected all one book, I'll definitely buy it. It's a wonderful story.
I got to say that I think that Marco Cecchetto made incredible strides in the art. And I think also not just him, but sort of how they produced it. I feel like this, like they sort of simplified the coloring and sort of made it look a little cleaner by this point. And it worked a lot better for me like that because I didn't like the art at first.
Yeah, so if you all like Rucka, I suggest you go back or look for it if it comes out because it was a great 16-issue story. Just really wonderful.
There will be blood. So that is all that we have to say about the books of the week, but we always like to check in with the iFanboy community and see what you guys think. So we're going to read through the top 5 picks of the week by percentage as of the time of recording. Probably a little bit different when you hear this. Connor, go through them. I just want to hear you stumble on this stuff again.
Number 5, Aquaman 0 with 4.5%. Number 4 was Journey into Mystery 644 with 4.6%. Very, very close between 4 and 5. Number 3 was Fury Max. Number 6 was 6.3%, the iFanboy pick of the week. Number 2 was Happy number 1 with 23.1%. And number 1, the fan favorite but not by a lot, Wolverine the X-Men number 17 with 29.4%.
It's a nice spread. It was a good spread.
I really hope people bet money on this kind of stuff.
I hope so, but it always changes, so they have to
tell us your stories.
Andrew Gabaret of set of Amazing Spider-Man number 694 gave the story a 2 out of 5 and gave the art a 3 out of 5, and the pick of the week percentage was just under 1%. He said the Alpha storyline is over, and it goes out with a whimper rather than a bang. At the start of this arc, it appeared that Alpha would be a mainstay in the Spideyverse, but given events here, that seems unlikely. The resolution of the Alpha situation is way too fast and way too Deus Ex Machina. We are constantly told that Alpha is dangerous and that he's Spidey's sidekick, but these two things are never obvious. Instead of dealing with the main threat in the issue, Spider-Man spends his time where else? Saving Aunt May. I've seen this routine before.
I'm just glad I'm not reading Spider-Man right now.
None
of this sounds appealing to me.
Yeah, I've heard that. But I think that there's a type of fan. There's a bunch of people who are enjoying it. Like, it's their thing. So,
although Alpha seems to be very divisive. But
yeah. Sometimes that's a good thing.
Winter Soldier number 1 was reviewed by BLK Assassin 106, and he gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and at the time of recording, nobody made this their pick of the week, although it was very good. BLK Assassin 106 says, "This issue was very good, but not very much happened. What makes this issue good is that Bucky is frustrated that he cannot catch up with Novikov, and he's been a step or two behind him the entire arc, and the reader is also beginning to get frustrated because there's nothing going on but a lot of conversation between Winter Soldier and Hawkeye. When there's a fight in the middle of this issue, you feel like a little better because, as Winter Soldier says, I'm just glad to punch something. Butch Guys continues to do a good job on art, and his panel layouts get interesting on a few pages." This is great. I think this Punisher and Winter Soldier, Josh, the two books you missed out on.
I'm reading them.
This has been wonderful.
I'm back on and reading this. And there was Hawkeye flying around talking to Bucky. I'm cool with that, dude.
Brubaker does a great Hawkeye-Bucky conversation.
Yeah, he does. I like those two a lot. I did a short story just for fun based on that, I think. I don't know if they were ever together. They must have been, though. That's must have been where I got it.
So those are their user reviews. You can go to fanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review your books. And if the reviews are good and they're about books we're not talking about in the main segment, they'll get them the show. Keep that in mind when doing your reviews.
Hey, so you know the New York Comic Con is coming up? Connor, were you aware of that?
Yeah, I'm fucking aware of it.
I want to point out that he's not saying that because of the sponsor. He just doesn't.
He doesn't like to travel. It's too soon. Lots of things to do between now and then.
October 11th through 14th at the Javits Center in New York City. Comic guests include Brian K. Vaughan, Rick Remender, Jeff Johns, Ivan Reese, or Rice. I don't know. Jonathan Hickman, Mark Waid, Kieran Gillen, Mike Mignola, Scott Snyder, and many, many, many more. Entertainment guests, the people who are not necessarily comics, but somehow are deemed to fit appropriate for autograph and pop culture type people are Bill Paxton.
Whoa.
Adam West, Christopher Lloyd.
I don't know if I could meet Adam West. I think I'd have to keep a wide berth.
I'm just thinking of Christopher Lloyd saying that line. What does yellow
light mean?
There's a taxi joke for those of you not following along. Elmo is going to be there, and the large black man who talks for him, who we all know because of that documentary, whose name I can't remember. Sorry. David Wayne, Rob Corddry, Paul Scheer.
More of a Nate Corddry guy.
John Stewart made a great joke about that once. And Sean Astin, who would like to have potatoes with you. And then, oddly enough, Ben Folds 5 is playing a kickoff. It's just the weirdest thing. It's playing a kickoff concert for those of you who have VIP and four-day ticket holders on Thursday, October 11th. There are tickets available. Four-day passes are $85. Three-day passes are $65 until October 8th. So hurry up and buy now. There's not an unlimited quantity of those. Single-day tickets are also still available. You can go to NewYorkComicCon.com to buy tickets and the full details on the show. We are going to be there. Everybody you're listening to right now and more, it's going to be a really fun time. I haven't been back to the town in a while. Connor's making a hometown reunion. We're going to have a party. Look up on the website for details about that.
Com, look in the buzz bar, the buzzable bar, and you'll see a post about New York Comic Con, which includes the location of our table on the con floor. It includes the information about the panel that Ron is moderating, and it includes the information about our party, which will be Friday night in the same location as last year. If you went last year, you'll remember how crowded it was, so come early. So if you want to know about New York Comic Con, go to ifanboy.com. All the information is there right at the top of the page.
I've
got my underwear laid out.
Nice. The ones your mother picked out for you?
Yep.
That's a Seinfeld joke.
No, that's right.
let's
she has an eye for colors.
Those are the kind of Seinfeld references I want to use. A lot of people go for the obvious ones, but not me.
God, that's you pulled that one from way back. So let's do a couple of emails.
It's there, man, all the time, just like the Hulk.
Drew wrote in and says, I'm remembering hearing Joe Hill speak about the whole creator compensation for movies and whatnot. He brought up how Iron Man 3 is based on Warren Ellis' extremist arc, and Hill said that Ellis won't get a dime of any of it because it was a work for hire job. Now, this leads me to my question. The new Captain America movie subtitle is Winter Soldier. Now, the whole Bucky Winter Soldier thing came into Cap War by Ed Brubaker, as we know.
We do.
So if Brubaker has signed an exclusive contract by Marvel, does that change things? Will he get any compensation for the movie? And even though Brubaker used Bucky, who already existed, he did create the Winter Soldier character. And since he created that person, does that mean he is going to get compensation? P.S. I know this is all speculation that will be in the new Cap movie plot-wise. We're just speaking hypothetically.
Okay, speaking hypothetically, well, the unhypothetical part is that we don't know. We have no way of knowing. We probably never will know unless these people come.
I don't want to know.
That's true. The way that it works, though, is that everybody has a different contract. And it depends on how that contract was for that creator on that character. It does happen sometimes.
And the company, too. Yeah. DC used to give out.
Exactly. This is what I was going
to say. Money to creators for stuff that appeared in movies. This was the Paul Levitz era. I don't know if they still do it. I don't know.
There was stuff in Batman Begins. I know that was taken from stuff Chuck Dixon did. Just little things here and there. And I remember reading, like, he said he got a check for like $6,000 once or something like that. And other people get very less. Some people create things for Marvel or somebody, and they, you know, they make a movie and they never get anything from it and they end up in court. So it's very individual, and it's also very private, so there's no way. But it's definitely not an either-or thing. You can't say, you know, Ellis won't get a dime for it because, I mean, he might know specifically, but that's not necessarily going to be the case, basically. Yeah. And also, that, you know, I don't want to say that it's necessarily beneficial for somebody from terms of exposure, but it's not going to help it's not going to hurt Ed Brubaker's screenwriting career if Captain America Winter Soldier comes out and does really well and he can go in and pitch like, well, that was actually my story that I did. So he may not get money for that. He might, I don't know, but you know, it's kind of good for your rep in another way. Maybe
plot points for the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if they're taking his story out, that gives you a
No. I'm saying, what are the plot points that are going to be? Yes, what the plot points we're going to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and that's his second spec. We have no idea. I
can tell you, for one thing, Cap is going to sprinkle some of Phil Coulson's ashes on the Danube.
You know that.
Really?
I know that.
Well, you should.
I've read early drafts that I have written.
He's going to cry for half an hour.
They're in a folder.
Yeah, half an hour. Crying.
I think it would be a nice moment. That's all I'm saying. Respect.
I mean, it's all laid out there pretty damned well. You know, like that thing where Cap sees Bucky or thinks he sees Bucky in the distance doing something. It's like, what? And then he goes after him for the hunt. I'm sure that's going to be what happens. And the thing is, though, it doesn't matter. As long as it's done well in the movie, then it isn't going to matter what happened in the comics, because the percentage of people who read those comics and know about them compared to the percentage of people it takes to make a successful movie, it just doesn't matter.
You're saying the comics don't matter?
Yep, I am.
They don't exist after the movie.
Yeah, it's actually almost
just making sure. I'm just diagramming the sentence.
That's fine. Let's
read our next email.
Okay. From Anonymous. Hey, iFanboy, I have recently started to listen to your podcast, and I love every one of them. My question is, I want to be a comic book writer, but I have a few problems. I am a minor, that's with an O-R. I'm only 15, but I have so many ideas that I think will be amazing. I want to know, what comic company should I send a submission to? I ruled out Marvel, DC, and Image, because there's no way I'm making it there. But I'm thinking about Dynamite, Boom Studios, or Dark Horse. Please use this. Thanks, Anonymous. There's no or involved. He's a minor. He's a young person. He's not 15 and working. And
dig out coal.
He's not. You know, right. This is in Harlan County.
This is normally the kind of question that I would put on my Make Comics podcast. And what I would say to you is to listen, like, look up anything that says Make Comics or Making Comics on iFanboy. It used to be Making. Now it's Make. There's a ton of information there. There's no rules. There's all sorts of ways to do it.
The era, though, when they allowed teenagers to write comics is over.
It is. But the point being, you are only 15. And that's kind of what I wanted to get to. Dude, you haven't even started yet. And it's okay. But the good news is that you've all got just 3 days. Sorry, I started doing Eric and Russ. The good news is that you have enough time to figure it out and to practice, because that's what you need to do more than anything, is you need to practice. You need to read and you need to write all the time. If you don't get your foot in there for another 10 years, you're still way the fuck ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Don't worry about submissions, because no one is going to publish you unless you've had comics made. So get comics made, and it might take you a really long time to get them done, and it might take you even longer to get them done well.
Or create a very successful television show.
That also does
help. Should he or she consider comics online, like publishing online before printing something? Or
that's an option. That's definitely a thing, but you've got to make some comics before you know how to do it. You're not going to get published without having been published. I mean, that's the
irony of it, is you can't publish comics until you've published a comic. So.
But the thing is, I think you also need to understand, you need to research how this actually works. You can't submit to Marvel and DC. They don't accept them, so it doesn't really matter. Image is a different thing. Image, you make a comic book and you take it to them and you say, will you publish this? And they'll say yes or no. If you're out of blue, most likely the chances are they're going to say no. But if it's really, really good and maybe you are a savant genius, that will happen. But, you know, you're really young and you have a lot of time to learn about how the industry works. So do your homework. But more than that, get creating and do it hard and do it good and keep doing it and don't be satisfied.
Do it hard.
Wait a minute. This person is listed as anonymous. Did you just create this email just to plug your show?
No, there was actually a name in the email, but he'd signed it anonymous, so I decided not to tell him.
I wouldn't put it past Josh, because he will find a way to make comics into this show's fabric as much as possible.
Oh, now it's just making me feel bad. No way. I don't have time to make them. So
this kid doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's what I would do, because I don't have enough other emails waiting. Hundreds of them.
All right, so those are the emails. You can send us an email at contact@fanboy.com if you want to get in the show. Make it a good one, because we like to read the good emails.
You can listen to our Don't Miss podcast. This week I'm going to be talking to Gabriel Hardman Pal about Planet of the Apes Cataclysm number 2. Because you can pick up 1 and 2, but it's their new series from Boom Studios. There's also the Make Comics podcast that we talked to that comes out on Wednesday. Don't Miss is on Monday. These both have their own feed, so make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe to them.
I finally saw Rise of the Planet of the Apes last week.
It was great.
It's great.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a really good movie.
Yeah. I don't know if I need a sequel, but...
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
But I enjoyed that.
Sorry.
It was creepy. Every time he looked at the camera,
yeah,
Caesar, I was like, oh, stop. Oh, freaking me out.
I reviewed that over on the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast, which I highly recommend.
I remember that. Paul, why don't you give him a quick shout out to your podcast before we move on to the next one?
Fuzzy Typewriter is a fun show where we talk about storytellers, art, and artists. Recently, we talked about Borderlands and weird UK crime shows. We did a grab bag show just recently. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the most recent season of Doctor Who. We're going to be talking about Seven Samurai coming up, all different topics. It's fun. We keep it interesting. So
cannot escape Doctor Who as hard as I try. Paul and I also talked about The Dark Knight Returns Part 1, along with Ryan Haupt and Chris Neusman, the Fabled iFanboy Animation Brain Trust. We did actually an extra long episode because there's a lot to talk about in this show.
And this goes through the first two issues?
It's the first two, yes. It's basically up through the mutant story. And then it ends with him defeating the mutants and then Joker waking up.
Let me ask you this. Should I watch it?
I really enjoyed it, Paul.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was the best one. And it's really interesting what they do with it. Great lively discussion, I thought. One of the better discussions based on this, because one of the people in the Brain Trust really was not happy. And I'll let you guess who, because it wasn't Paul and I. We just admitted we liked it. So
you can read my text review on the site as well.
Was it the only person who was old enough to have been buying the issues and been old enough to buy them at the time?
Maybe.
And the people who are like that sometimes do not like seeing that revisited in any different way.
Maybe.
That's exactly what happened.
So you can check that out on the podcast feed behind this show, or you can go to ifanboy.com straight away and stream it from there, unless you're listening to this in the future, in which case you'd have to search for it. It's a pain in the ass. Just look for it on the iTunes feed or wherever it is you listen to the show. It'll be behind this one. It's good stuff.
You can check out ifanboy.com, like he said. You can read the Pick of the Week review that I wrote and all the other stuff that's going on.
Who has the Book of the Month review?
I think I do.
Oh, it's next week.
But it's not this Monday. It's next Monday. So kick that can down the road, baby. That's my Social Security issue. And all the stuff that's going on there. All the script bombs from last week are in here.
And you bombed yourself?
No, I didn't. I just keep seeing them. I think I'm going to stop because now it doesn't work.
It's underlined in red.
Yeah, that also doesn't help. Go to ifanboy.com about. You can see who we is. And the various people on the staff. And all the social networking links that you can use to ask us awkward questions. On the internet.
Really inappropriate.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and you can make sure you don't miss any of the stuff that we've got going on. Breaking news and exclusive covers.
Movie stills.
Yeah, we have movie stills. We got all that stuff. And you can go to facebook.com/ifanboy if that's more your flavor. And then, of course, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or you can send us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with any questions or stuff you have. Or maybe a print job is done and you've called us because that's the only number you had. Maybe
that
what
happened?
That did happen. I had to send that to the person who's not here.
All right. I see what you're talking about. Okay, so Paul, you're next. Sorry.
Oh, I'm the copyright symbol that's supposed to represent me.
I forgot to change.
If you dig us, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to a bad word. Podcast spread the iFanboy spunk. Is what it says.
You know what? It doesn't sound dirty when you say it. It just sounds like we're spunky.
I'd like to point out that you skipped the middle section, Paul.
No, I did that.
You did? I wasn't paying attention.
I know
you were. I'll be honest with you.
I know. I took over the one that was supposed to go to Ron, and then I did the one that I was supposed to. I sort of gave you the day off on
He's
that.
Jay. I'm copyright symbol.
That's not my fault. That's an autocorrect that the computer does. I can't stop it from doing that.
Okay.
It is your fault,
but there's no P on here, though.
Oh, that's totally my fault. But that's the I would point out I almost made it all the way through a script without making a mistake.
Did you type this text file in like an old typewriter with like a missing letter or something?
I do have a little app that I think Ron sent that makes my MacBook that makes a typewriter sound. And I was downstairs typing something at one point. I put it on, and I find it charming.
So you can feel like Jessica Fletcher.
And Lindsay upstairs is like, will you please shut that off? Like she could hear it through the walls. And I was like, uh-huh. And then I didn't. She's like, I'm not kidding. Shut it off. I can't even turn it on for a second.
Could it go through your headphones? And like,
listen when I hit return. Ding. And then it makes me want to eat corn on the cob. It's awesome.
That is very cool. So in the meantime, we're gonna investigate this app for everyone in the iFanboy staff. And we'll get back to you next week about the new comics. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Josh. Have a lovely week now. I was going to say weekend, but it's over. Ding. Actually, let me see if I can. Ding. Oh, no, I have headphones on. You won't hear it. I don't know how things work.
Does a yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What? Yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What? Yellow light me. Slow down.